Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
You're listening to Roundtable. I'm Yeo Honglin, joined by Josh and Ding Heng. Earlier this month, we started a little activity on Roundtable as well as CGTN Radio Weibo, asking whether or not you know about the place Kuliang. Did you get it right? Yes, Kuliang is Guling. It's a place in the city of Fuzhou in Fujian province, where this amazing story actually happened. What story? Well, let's take a listen.
Home.
I love you, Betty.
Love.
Remember?
Thank you.
Bing An. Bing Bing An An.
Fate.
Take care.
Me too.
What do they truly mean?
Dashen, where did you go? Dashen!
Embark on a century-long journey with CGTN Radio's latest offering, Echoes of Kuliang, a gripping audio drama series inspired by real-life tales.
Has anyone heard of a Guodashan?
From unexpected encounters to heartfelt reunions, immerse yourself in a narrative of love, peace, and enduring friendship.
He's a piece of my lost childhood.
Listen to Echoes of Kuliang on CGTNradio.com and all major podcast platforms.
Bing. Bing An.
Echoes of Kuliang, CGTN's radio drama of the year, is going to air on Roundtable later this month. Like we've heard in the audio trailer, it's a story of love, of reunion, and the friendship of two countries and several generations. And if you're a loyal listener to Roundtable or to CGTN Radio, you might even notice some familiar voices featuring completely different styles. It definitely will be a really fun listening experience. If you enjoy any voice in particular, if you find any character touching your soul in a special way, if you enjoy any plot so much that you want to share, make sure you leave us a message at CGTN Radio's Weibo account. We would love to hear what you have to say. As for today's show, each of us holds dear memories of childhood toys, be it the gentle companionship of dolls, the dynamic adventures of robots, or the boundless realms crafted from building blocks. For those of us who found joy in the letter, building blocks were the keys to kingdoms of our own making. Join us as we explore why building blocks toys, especially those adorned with the richness of Chinese tradition, have become a beloved treasure across all ages. Also, in today's world where live streaming has woven itself into the fabric of our daily lives, the possibility of becoming an unwitting participant in someone else's podcast looms large. We'll take a look at how our privacy and consumer rights are endangered through the lenses of others in the digital age, highlighting the urgent need for safeguards against non-consensual live streaming. Now, as a classic trend toy, building blocks toys create various creative shapes and structures through the combination and assembly of parts. Due to its diverse value, wide age coverage, and strong playability, it is widely welcomed by consumers. In recent years, building blocks incorporating traditional Chinese craftsmanship have become a remarkable new trend in the market. What makes these building blocks with Chinese traditional elements special? Actually, let's start with how many different types, or at least how many different types of building blocks toys can we name here on Roundtable? What are the most familiar ones? What are some relatively niche ones? And can you name some?
Yeah, I think they can be divided into various types according to the materials behind the making of them, like wood, plastic, and so on.
Sure.
And in terms of the different methods of building them, I think these toys can be further divided into, say, stacking blocks, assembly blocks, interlocking blocks, and kinetic blocks, etc., etc. And in terms of their sizes, especially the size of their parts, they can be divided into large particles, medium, small, mini, and micro particles, etc. So I think in terms of technology or the techniques used behind this building blocks, there is one particular category called mortise and tenon building block. That is a type that features some, say, unique or distinct Chinese characteristics because it has a history of more than 7,000 years in human society. Mortise and tenons is really regarded as one of the oldest construction methods in the world. In places of nail, it relies on interlocking joints to connect the wood together. The earliest examples of this building techniques have been found in eastern China's Hemudu cultural site, let's put it in this way, and later in central European countries as well. And yeah, but the exact techniques behind it could be a little complicated. Yeah, but the basic idea is that there are two parts, right? Two components. One is the mortise, namely a hole, something of that sort that is cut into one piece of wood. And then there is a tenon, namely a projection on the end of another piece of wood that is designed to fit snugly into the mortise. It is inserted into the mortise. It is secured with glue, and sometimes it is secured with some additional pins or wedges as well in order to lock it in place.
So I think most people are quite familiar with Legos, for example. On Legos, you have different pieces of Legos, and by putting them together, you're actually putting the outstretching part into the hole of another piece of Lego so that you secure them, you lock them together. And the idea about the mortise and tenon is quite similar, except that when it comes to Legos, the size, the shape of these holes, of these tenon parts, are exactly the same. They're all the same, just putting them together. Whereas when you're using a mortise and tenon structure, actually the mortise part and the tenon parts can differ with different size. There are the through tenon, the tenon passes completely through the mortise, and also the stopped tenon, the tenon stops before reaching all the way through the piece of the wood, which in my opinion resembles a little bit of the Lego pieces. And also there's the twin tenon, the hunched tenon, the dovetail tenons, so all different types of tenons and all different types of mortise. And the idea with the Chinese style building block pieces is that instead of having a relatively more standardized pieces that you are quite familiar with, you can either follow a blueprint and build out the toy that you know about already, or you can be creative and build your own things. It's your own choice. But for the Chinese style building blocks, at least the mortise and tenon types of building block toys, you need to figure out how to so craftily and so smartly putting all the little pieces together with the right order so that they do not fall apart even in a earthquake. So they basically confine each other in the structure that they can be somehow as stable as can last for thousands of years, because that's the situation for Chinese architecture. Am I making sense, Josh? Are you intrigued with Chinese mortise and tenon structure toys?
I am a bit intrigued, and I think that it makes a lot of sense because architecture is actually a very ancient thing, right? And it, and the way in which buildings have been developed and designed over thousands of years is quite different all around the world. And so I think that it's quite nice for anybody to be able to appreciate these differences by maybe building something themselves. And I am quite interested in doing this because I know that having been in Asia for quite a long time now, that I am starting to notice when I go back to the UK, for example, I'm starting to notice some of the differences in the way buildings are not just shaped, but, you know, really in the way that they're structured. And so I think that it makes sense that there's some big differences between this kind of Chinese building blocks and, you know, Lego, for example. But then again, I'm pretty sure that Lego also has versions and models.
Oh, definitely.
That are quite similar to the ones, right? I mean, a building block is a building block, right? I mean, I've done some research and I found some, and they look pretty similar to be honest with you.
That's the funny thing, because the final products are quite similar. You can use different techniques to assemble the pieces together. The difference here is actually the technique that are making the interlocking joints, linking different pieces together in different ways. I think that's the major difference. But the funny thing is, when it comes to consumer of these different types of building block toys, apparently, first of all, people with different age groups are buying building block toys with different purposes and different aims. And in the same time, if they are enthusiastic, for example, Lego lover, most likely they would find joy in the Chinese style Sun Mao or mortise and tenon building blocks as well. And that is the reason that these building blocks with traditional Chinese styles are also getting popularity in the market, not only in the Chinese market, but in the overseas market. So how's the building blocks industry overall? Do we have info in that regard?
Well, we're talking about a pretty vast market and with some really steady growth potential because according to a report that was jointly released by the Guangdong Toys Association and China Insights Consultancy, the market size of building blocks toys here in China has already exceeded $10 billion already. That's more than 70 billion yuan in Chinese currency. So this particular size we're talking about here has already placed China among one of the top three markets globally in this regard. And the growth rate of the Chinese market is even higher than the global average. But that being said, I think the per capita toy consumption in China is, yeah, of course, on one hand, it is growing rapidly, but compared to some of the developed markets, such as the United States, there is still some room for growth potential, I think. That's the bigger trend by the industry analysis.
Yes, well, it's also slightly difficult to get stats on the building block toy market in the UK and in Europe and other countries as well. But definitely, I agree that the toy market is expanding, it's growing. Actually, the toy market in Europe is massive, and the UK toy market is one of the largest in Europe. I did find some statistics. According to the British Toy and Hobby Association, the BTHA, which I only learned about before this show, the UK toy market was valued at £3.3 billion in 2021 with steady growth over the years. And apparently it's still growing. And there's also trends such as, this is quite interesting, I think, though, which I think ties in, I would argue, with this kind of toy, because there's actually a trend apparently with STEM toys. So that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics toys and eco-friendly toys. So these are, you know, toys that are supposed to help with cognitive development and such. And I think that these kind of building blocks are like that because especially if they're quite technical and if they're anything to do with architecture, there's a degree of mathematics involved. There's even, you could even argue that there's a degree of physics involved with it, right? You learn about the strength of certain structures and what will hold what up. And there's certainly a lot of creativity involved when it comes to things like color and design. So I think that this might be one reason why this kind of toy has always been popular and has always had some sort of support, right? Because from everything from kids in kindergarten, you know, building blocks and things like this, very simple structures, all the way up to adults, right? There can be really technical stuff that you can build, all the way up to actually building a building if you're an architect, right? So maybe this is where this toy lies in this trend. I'm not so sure.
That was my initial assumption as well. And when you talk about the STEM toys, actually, it reminds me of a toy that stands basically in the middle between building blocks and STEM toys. That is the Lu Ban Suo, the Lu Ban Lock. It is a kind of toy that is known as a traditional Chinese mechanical puzzle that consists of several interlocking pieces, usually made from wood, which is why I consider it kind of like building blocks as well. If you pull them apart, they're basically little wooden chips or wooden boards that look quite the same, But if you carefully put them together in the right order, they can be interlocked together. So it's kind of like a three-dimensional puzzle made of these different pieces to fit together in a specific way to form a solid, compact structure. And the pieces usually consist of notched sticks or blocks that interlock in a precise manner, and the design of these puzzles can vary greatly in complexity and size, and ranging from a few pieces to complex arrangements that form intricate shapes. And I have to admit, I only fell in love with this kind of games when I'm around, I think, in my 20s. So I was hardly a kid when I started to play these little toys. And they are quite interesting. They give you the room to think about what would happen if you put this block on top of that one. And they allow you to think about what will happen if you do it a different way. So apparently the moves and the sequence is quite important in playing these games. And they have become quite popular in China as well. And this leads to my next question. That is, do you think people in different age groups who are interested in these games have different reasons? Or what are the reasons?
Well, speaking from an adult's perspective, I think that's indeed the case, that building blocks are really attracting people of different ages. We primarily think of it as a toy for kids, but that's not really the case, I think, because first and foremost, I think, at least here in the Chinese context, building blocks, this kind of toys, can really let people experience and feel the beauty of ancient Chinese architecture and some Chinese, the wisdom of some ancient Chinese technology or techniques. And this is something that is beyond the knowledge or beyond the perception or the beyond the cognition of kids. This is something that is more appreciated by the adults. And I think there is also a form of, say, I need to express myself when I flirt with this kind of toys, right? And it has even become a trend in social media platform because there is a growing demand among the Chinese for this kind of cultural and entertainment products that are creative and personalized and socially engaging. So more often than not, I would say there can be really a lot of emotional resonance with this kind of things on social media. So this is one thing. And another point I'd like to make here is that when we talk about this kind of things, technology is really important. Many of these toy companies behind the making of these toys, they have intensified research and development to incorporate many intelligent hardware technology elements into this. For example, we are talking about mobile robots and interactive devices. And, you know, for really tech-savvy adults, these are really, really attractive features on the part of these toys.
Actually, when you talk about high tech, it's something very important to building block making, because for the building block toys to combine perfectly together, actually the precision tolerance should be quite small. For example, for Lego, it's less than 0.001 millimeter. And for a lot of other building blocks with traditional Chinese, let's say, styles and elements, the mortise and tenon ones, the precision tolerance is also quite small, so they can fit perfectly together. So I think that is one thing that's facing relative industries as well, that is, they need to make sure that their pieces are made very precisely to the state that they can hold very well together and can provide consumers with a good playing experience.
Yeah, so in a word, it's multifunctional for both kids and adults alike, because for kids, this kind of playing with this kind of toys can cultivate their logical thinking, maybe, or problem solving capability cultivation. And for adults, I think on the part of adults, they actually have more complex needs in terms of making something, in terms of creating something, and this need has also been catered to.
Yes. And as we conclude our journey through the intricate world of building block toys, enriched with Chinese tradition, it is clear that these creations are more than just entertainment. They are a bridge connecting generations, an educational tool, and a testament to the enduring appeal of cultural heritage. Through innovation and homage to tradition, these toys offer a tangible link to the past while fostering creativity and learning in the present. The story of these building blocks is a reminder of the power of play to transcend age, culture, and time, embodying the spirit of both heritage and innovation. You're listening to Roundtable. We'll be back after the break.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
Welcome back to Roundtable. I'm Niu Honglin with Ding Heng in the studio and Josh Cotterill on the line. Imagine sitting down for a meal, only to find out later that your private moments were broadcast to the world without your permission. This isn't just a hypothetical scenario, it is happening all around the world. Today on Roundtable, let's try to draw the thin line businesses walk in the digital age. So I have to ask you, Josh, has this ever happened to you or your friends or your friends' friends?
Actually, not so much.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there is an example that I have in China. So there is a restaurant, which of course I will not name, but it is a Western-style restaurant in Beijing. And on their dianping, there is a picture of the restaurant and there is a picture of my friends who happen to be foreigners, right? They're both white and they were both on a lunch break. And they're both quite well-dressed, quite smart, you know, and they've sort of been used as one of the main photos. And this confused them. They kind of found it quite humorous because they haven't been made to look bad or anything, right? The photos, if anything, maybe even a little bit flattering.
Fancy,
but
yeah.
They were quite surprised by this. And I was also quite surprised by this as well, because in the UK, the laws around this are quite gray. It's quite a gray area, right? And so I was quite surprised by this, but this is the only example I can think of. And to be honest, if anything, it just seems a little bit creepy to me. That's about as far as it goes. I'm not sure whether it should be allowed or not. But myself, personally, I've had photos taken of me quite a few times when I've been out in restaurants, but not by the retailer. I think the only few times that it's happened have been when I've been in a hairdresser's a few times. I don't know why, because I don't have a lot of hair left, but
that's not true. You
still
look great.
Thank you so much. Yeah, as do you. But yes, they've asked me if they can take a picture of my hair, but that makes a bit more sense to me, because that's always been a sort of staple of the hairdressing industry, right? That they take pictures of someone's hair before and after.
And also, so, if they ask you, yeah. I think it's kind of fine. But Ding Heng, if you're not asked,
yes,
and it happens to you, would you stand up to the business owner and protect your rights?
Yeah, I think I will definitely choose that option, because any normal person would feel very much offended, because getting shot or getting filmed without your consent, you know, that's really a violation of your personal rights, especially your photo copyright or your image copyright, etc. Now, I have heard some people making this argument, okay, you are in a public space, so you're not supposed to care too much about your privacy, the so-called privacy. Why would you care about privacy? I totally disagree. I think this kind of argument is entirely senseless about what kind of legitimate rights should be entitled to each and every individual. That's very stupid. But anyway, I feel like this is a new trend, or even not that new, right? But this is a newly emerged trend, but we are talking about the rise of social media and the online influencers, online bloggers, live streaming. They're really, really powerful nowadays. But I feel like when we talk about the regulation of these players, maybe we need to think about, you know, how to copy in those existing regulations targeting the so-called traditional media like us. copying these rules into this social media realm. Because media is media, either it's traditional media or social media, it's media. There are certain rules you need to adhere to.
I totally agree. And yes, your consumer rights, your image rights is definitely being breached in this situation. And especially when certain business owners are actually using these image or using these live stream as a way to advertise for their business. So without consent, it's definitely not okay, which is why for certain cases in different parts of China, when, for example, an elder couple in Shanxi province actually file a complaint to the business owner and later to related departments, actually their image were taken down from the advertising area of the business owner's social media accounts. And similar cases happen as well. But I was wondering, Josh, do you think as a regular consumer, is there anything that we can do to be more vigilant or to better protect our consumer rights and image rights in this day and age?
Well, it's very difficult to do so, especially if you don't know that it's happening to you. But I think that the responsibility is really on the business. I think that they should state quite clearly that they might use your image. I mean, on an individual level, I guess, what can you do, really, if this is a free-for-all and businesses are allowed to do this? I guess that you have to accept that there is a possibility that your image might be used. I think, honestly, this is how we all have to go about life these days to some degree, right? Because everybody has most people have a very high-quality camera in their pocket. The amount of cameras now in existence compared to even 10 years ago, the quality of the camera and 20 years ago, is incredible, right? So I think that this is just something we have to accept now. And I think that the laws and regulations around this just need to be slightly stricter. But it's such a gray area. It's so difficult to monitor because also, you know, I know that in a lot of areas you are allowed to film people. And then there's ideas about like journalism, right? If it's used for journalistic purposes, you're also allowed. This obviously isn't the case. So yeah, on an individual level, what can we do? I guess just try to accept that this is the reality now is what I would say, but maybe that's a bit too negative.
Well, I think at least you, as long as you're aware of the situation, you can talk to whomever is live streaming or shooting a video or taking a picture, talk about it, know your rights, and especially after listening to Roundtable, you would know that if you use you as a consumer as their advertising material, they would definitely need to get your consent. And it's a reminder of all of us to be vigilant and proactive in safeguarding our privacy and to demand the same from those who serve us. And that brings us to the end of today's Roundtable. Thanks to Ding Heng and Josh, and of course, those of you who are still listening. Until next time, keep the conversations going and the ideas flowing. I'm Yong Honglin. Bye.